All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Onside Inside Podcast. I'm your host, Corey Tompkins, and today it's episode 16, and it's unlike any of the other ones that we've done before. So today we've got the man, the myth, the guy that's behind the camera, behind the content, our media guy, Nick. He's on this podcast today, so it's going to be one for you guys that are all sort of been sitting in the shadows and asking questions. Nick is about to be asking them on your behalf and, you know, exposing me and, you know, finding a little bit more about myself. So, yeah, Nick, thank you for jumping on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, yeah, we thought we'd, you know, we not that we were running out of ideas or anything like that, but we thought it was a good point in time, episode 16. We're definitely, you know, we're over the honeymoon stage of it. For you guys that are listening, and I feel like now is a good opportunity for you guys to get a little bit of context about us and, you know, a little bit more about Nick and a little bit more about me. So, yeah, get ready to listen in. And, yeah, so Nick, tell the listeners a little bit about you, because I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there that are wondering, you know, who does this? And I can tell you guys that are listening, it ain't me. I don't have enough time to be doing this, so... yeah, just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your journey in regards to getting to here, all that sort of stuff.
So, I'm Nick. I'm the guy who makes Corey's a most hated person in the faith community.
Yeah.
I'll keep it short. Been in the filming game since 2019, 2020-ish. Pretty much right when I graduated school in 2020. Started doing everything as people do, weddings, music videos, shop ads, Instagram reels, everything I could. Started to find my niche in weddings. So did a lot of weddings over the period of like 2 years. Got burnt out in that because it's every wedding is pretty much exactly the same. You know what you're doing. There wasn't much like creative thinking. You can make it really cool, but it's so structured. It's basically the same.
Yeah.
Started branching out to music videos more. It's actually doing well in that, did that for a bit. But artists don't have money. Just keeping it real.
Yeah.
Unless you're shooting for like...
It's a tough market.
Yeah. It's tough to break into, but when you're at the like the top of it, that's when you're really making livable coin.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, I guess that's like anything. You know, yeah. And like everyone always looks at the top 1% and assume that it's the vast majority of it in reality. Than 99.99% of everyone else. It's, you know, it's very tough to make an actual living.
And then from music videos, I transitioned into the content space where it had a mix of everything I wanted. It was like a market that was thriving and still in its early stages.
And I think it still is.
Oh, 100% still in the early stages.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of creative freedom that you can do. It's like, even though you could be shooting for one creator, that one creator usually does a million different things. So that repetition, not repetition, it's not the right word, that, like, it's just not the same thing.
Yeah, like, it gives you, like, the flexibility to obviously put your own flair on it.
Yeah.
And mold it to what you want. And it, to be honest, it's like, as I said to you, like, you know, Nick's been with us for a while now, but I remember having the conversation with him in the early days, like, it's been a passion of mine, and it's been one of those things, like, you know, the business had to be at a point for me to be able to, number one, afford to get someone to do it, and, you know, I had to take the risk to do it. Still a little bit risky now, but, you know, it's definitely been something that I've been very passionate about, but, you know, I'm also not the biggest creative. Number one, didn't have the time. I just to prioritize it. I was trying to keep the main thing, like everyone is, you know, and keep money coming in the door. But I always knew that that was something that I wanted to do. And I did dabble in it, like everyone, you know, you flip the phone around and you take some photos and, you know, that sort of stuff. But I always knew that there was levels to it and you have to invest in order to eventually see a return. So, you know, in regards to my personal content journey, that's sort of, you know, with the business, for you guys that are listening, it's always just been it was always just myself and dabbling out and all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, about 12 to 18 months ago, I just took the jump and we ended up, getting someone, and Nick ended up coming in, and I explained to him, I sold him on the dream and told him what I told him what the plan was, like, especially with myself. And I could see it in Nick that, you know, I remember saying to Nick right in the early days, like, even in the interviewing stage, I was looking for someone that lived and breathed in that space. You know, because I feel like everyone wants to be a content creator. There's this fucking thing that gets thrown out into the market. I'm a content creator, but everyone tends to forget that, you know, it's easier said than done. When you are in the motions of doing it day to day out and you're having to constantly think of new ways and stuff like that, it can become mundane, and then that whole shiny light of, oh, I'm a content creator, wears off. So, you know, and I still say that to Nick constantly now, like, you know, everyone loves to throw out that thing. That's what they do as their day job. And for the most part, to the public, they would look at that and be like, oh, that's easy as. Well, you're scared to come in, yeah. But no, you've got to constantly think of new ways. So, I'm sort of plopper.
Like, yeah, no,
because I'm so used to posting these that, yeah, that's why I just got a natural bit. Yeah.
No, that is true. It's like, it is glamorized. And pretty much any business owner, it's like, everyone sees the big thing, but I'm probably in the office, like, planning, looking at analytics, writing scripts more than I'm actually out shooting and editing. But I feel like that's, if you're really trying to make it as a content creator, that's where you need to build your skill set, is that behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, and it's so massive. Like, I'm no expert either, but I always say to you, like, listen, dude, like, we need to keep pushing it new ways. Like, do this, do that, scheduling. Like, everyone just thinks that this shit just happens.
Yes, there's it just actually, comes out every day.
It just comes out. Like, you know, we go through ups and downs. Like, you can really get lost in the numbers. You know, meaning your followers and your pages and your analytics, you can get lost in that. And I feel like, as I said, I really just look from a business standpoint, from the outside. To a degree, you obviously need to abide by that. But at the same time, it also has to be from the gut. And we constantly change our plan of attack all the fucking time. You know, I remember literally the principle that I lived by right at the start was, you just keep throwing shit at the wall until something sticks. And then you go again and you go again and you go again and go again and go again and just keep going. And because, once the people that find something that works, I find anyway that you can only do that for so long.
Yeah.
And then you fucking,
you gotta evolve at some point.
Yeah, constantly. And especially with how fast content moves.
Yeah.
Like, you're literally evolving daily. Like, new trends, new music, new ways to do things. The same way that we make content now is not going to be the same way we make content in 6 months.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm passionate about it, because I feel like for Australia, you know, we're so early in it. Like, especially for you, like, you live and breathe that space. And, you know, for the side note, for all you guys that are listening and wondering exactly how Nick's job works, you know, for us, you know, we have people in our company that ask me the same thing. And, like, Nick doesn't have set hours. I never, you know, it's not one of those jobs where you can really clock in and clock out. Like, I'll message Nick at 11 p.m. or 6 a.m. or whatever. He's got to do X, Y, and Z. I always say to him, like, just, like, we've got things that we need to do in order to have a get there. I don't care. So, there obviously is flexibility in that, but you also have to perform.
Mm.
So,
just quickly on that is true. I do have the luxury of being able to pretty much work wherever I want, but people forget work still needs to get done.
Yeah.
I'm not just at a cafe drinking my latte, I don't even drink coffee, drinking my hot chocolate. It's like I'm there locked in on my laptop actually working. Anyways, quickly finish my story. It was up to
you. You told me, sorry, we fully just went off fucking track there, but you were talking about, you left high school, you started weddings, you started did your own thing, music videos, you realized there was no money in it, and then?
Yeah, got into the content space. This is all happening while I'm still working a day job, by the way. Got into the content space, like, linked up with a few creators, decided this is a niche I really want to break into. There's heaps of reasons, main one being it's so early, and I think it just suits my lifestyle a bit better. As compared to weddings, like, you do only need to really shoot, like, 4 or 5 weddings a month to be able to live. But it's like, you're shooting pretty much 14-hour days. But it's not even that, it's your clients are always so on you. Like, when's the video done? Have you started editing? Is it finished? I'm like, chill, you just got married yesterday. It takes me like 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Then McCory and here.
Yep. And how did you go about, like, obviously, I feel like in the early days, there was conversations that we had about you, you know, taking the leap from leaving your day job to now, like, doing what you're doing. Obviously, you know, you don't make $1 million a year. And, you know, have there ever been times where people have said to you, like, is this a real job? Like, how are you actually going to make a living? How are you going to make a life? And all that sort of stuff. Like, how have you been able to, like, push that to the side and just, like, keep focused on that it will eventually, like, become something? Like, have you drawn inspiration from people that have already done it, or how?
Well, that's true. A lot of people still don't understand what I do for work. Yeah. Like, my mom's old Samoan lady doesn't understand social media at all.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I think what keeps me going is, like we are our worst critic, but at the same time, my biggest fear is, like, an internal fear of, like, coming to the end of my life. And I'm thinking, like, what if I did take that leap?
Yeah.
Or, like, what if I did do this?
Yeah.
So I'm like, while I'm still young, healthy.
Yeah.
There's, like, I don't see why I shouldn't take the risk.
And what do you, because everyone's asked me, but what do you classify as being a success?
Our view on success was pretty similar.
Yeah.
It's not $1 million, which I'll still happily take.
Yeah.
It's just being able to have freedom with time and energy.
Yeah.
And, like, freedom, time, energy, and financial.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking financial freedom where, like, I can just go buy a Lamborghini if I want. Yeah. I'm more talking about, like, my family's looked after, my partner's looked after.
Yep.
If there's any, I don't know, big medical expenses that come up, like, it's not a massive stress, but we can still take a few holidays a year.
That's
all I want, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't want to be like, even though I love making content, I don't want to be at my desk editing 16 hours every single day.
Yeah.
Like, I still want to be able to take time off and enjoy life.
And I feel like you've gone through the highs and the lows of that recently as well. Yeah. You realize that, you know, I think recently, like, your fucking calendar was booked. You were doing this, you were doing that. You were still doing dribs and drabs to each of other clients and this, that, and the other. I think you said to me that you scaled right back to just niching down the people that you actually felt passionate about. Because, you know, you could easily just pick up small gigs here, there, and everywhere, do this on a Saturday, this on a Friday. You could ramp it to what you want and collect that extra little bit if that's what you wanted. But I feel like you've sort of now just, you know, you're only taking on projects that you're sort of passionate about, and, you know, it'll...
Yeah, no, that's... Yeah, I could, if I really wanted to, get booked out again like that.
Yeah.
But then I think what I started to realize is once that... like that honeymoon phase worn off, it was like you need to force yourself to be creative.
Yeah.
But if you're spreading yourself so thin across 1 million different clients, like, each person's not going to get the best version of you.
Yeah.
And especially at this job where, like, you can't just read a textbook and be like, this is what you do if you're not feeling creative.
Yeah.
It's like you have to, like, look after, like, your mental and emotional state.
Yeah.
Because it's like, if you're feeling low, it shows very easy in your work.
Yeah. And it's something that I've sort of learned this year in particular as well. It's like, it's easier just to be like, oh, you know, there's people out there that'll be like, oh, how can it be? You just come up with ideas and you just shoot stuff. But it's actually, like, a lot harder than what you might think. For us anyway, like, I'm more talking context-wise to the company and construction and what we do, like, for the guys that are listening and how we spin the content is, it's a lot more, I'm going to say harder. It's just, you've got to be mindful.
Yeah.
Number one, there's a lot of things that we talk about, me and Nick on the side, about, number one, who are we trying to approach? You know, obviously we don't want to overstep our mark because you don't want to be stepping into territory that you can never come back from, because at the end of the day, that will affect your brand in the long run. So there is a fine line between all this. And I remember saying to Nick Ryan in the early days, like, it is going to take time for him to know like, and there's processes and stuff that we've put in place now for the podcast and how we come up with content and that. But it is going to take time for him to know me, for him to know the company, the boys, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, and then constantly every time you come up with a new idea, you have to think about it a little bit and go, okay, well, how am I going to spin this to cover across? And some forms of content we put out there are leaning more one way than the other. But at the end of the day, it all reverts back to brand. Mm. You know, you want to be touching all arms. You want to be getting on brand, reaching out to the demographic that you want. You want to be creating something that is, you know, what was the saying that I came up with the other day? Like, you want it to be almost like a point of topic. You want people to have an opinion,
yeah,
opinionated topic about it. So when they get in on it, and that's how you get the engagement, is, you know, because you can only be, you can shoot montages,
yeah,
stacking up different photos or whatever. But, you know, something that we've learned anyway is that, for them, you know, just a little insider tip for you guys that are listening that are in construction, you want to work out ways to build your brand, is you need to really just think about ways that you can create content that is opinionated. So, you know, enabling the viewer to share their opinion, because tradies,
yeah,
allow you to share their opinion.
Yeah, tradies are like
keyboard warrior, yep, kings. You know, they're not like office people. They're not shy to jump on there and speak their mind. We personally, we love it. But
tradies, they're like, this isn't in a disrespectful or this respectful way. It's just how it is. They're like the most opinionated people I've met. So we play on that.
Just obviously context as well. Nick has brothers that are Robert.
Yeah, I've never been in construction, but I'm a three older brothers. We all are. Yeah. And it's like, I think that's where the art really comes in. If you're like a construction social media brand, it's like finding that line of like sort of getting people not aggravated, but like keen to share their opinion. But they're not getting them so keen that you get so much backlash.
And I think, like, just touching on this, this is like a really good topic as well. Is because there's a lot of like we both know there's a lot of construction companies out there that have fucking figured, yeah, made it on social media. That their social media has enabled them to build successful, massive brands in Australia. Anyway, and you know, those guys that jumped in 2018, 2017, that were doing that, those forms of content, montages, this, yeah, that, and the other. To be honest, that form of content probably wouldn't work this day. It's hard to really sit there and say, you know, for the guys that are saying, oh yeah, but the way that you do it now, you know, these guys have done X, Y, and Z, and they've built this massive company doing what they did. Where in reality, you know, the form of content they were doing back then would not be relevant, would not hit as hard as it would hit now. Were on top, they were on trend, well ahead of the curveball back then. So, not saying that what we do is fucking perfect either.
Yeah.
But it's just what I'm trying to say is you have to consistently evolve, and you can't compare an apple with an apple. You can't compare, you know, prime example, we know guys that produce similar content, but maybe it might be the actual person that is shooting that content, you know. They're not that engaging.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I don't look like a construction guy. Yeah. I don't look like, yeah. So for me, that obviously also builds opinions.
Mm.
And that's something that we've leaned on as well. So that's another insider tip for you guys. But, you know, these are all things that this is, you know, I talk about this, and I guess there's going to be a lot of guys that are listening in the car or wherever you guys listen in this that are going to say, oh, yeah, but, you know, you're fucking, the construction, you're just focusing on content. Like, what about all the guys on site? Do not ever get it twisted. As I always say to Nick, I keep the main thing the main. You know, I'm very adamant. You can ask anyone that is it around me. The guys on site, what we do in order, you know, the thing that puts the bread on the table for everyone that works in this company, that is the main sole focus. This is just a byproduct of that. And I'm fortunate enough that all the team that we have, the people that are in the company, all buy into it as well. So, you know, we're not just these fucking, I'm not over here and say I'm influencer, but like, we're not just these guys that just sit there just doing content. There is a methodical process to it, and we've got an obligation to not just fucking you know.
Yeah, I think people forget you still are a business owner.
Yeah.
And like, you still have the business part to do.
Yeah. Like, just before this, like, just before we were shooting, like, Nick was coming in the movie, he's like, ah, yeah, you know, we're currently in the midst of doing some stuff. So, but yeah, anyway. So, all right. Well,
I think it's time we,
I feel like we've just really gone off track. Have we missed anything about your content? I think you met me and then I told you about that. Let me just revert back to that a little bit. So, and the process on how Nick actually, come in. So we initially, employed a guy prior to Nick, and he come in and, well, sorry, let me really wind the fucking clock back for all you guys that are listening. Now, this wasn't something that I just tried once. Nick would be my fifth
guy. I didn't even know that.
Well, I had guys that were like subcontracting. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so they were third party. You know, you guys that listen, you probably do the same thing. You get a guy to come in, they look after your socials. I've tried that. I tried it all. Paid my super big money, got a uni student. I tried fucking everything on it. So, but anyway. What the one before Nick was when I really tried to niche down on it and say, like, this is what I want to do. I put up front the money, whatever. He ended up leaving. It was a very, very good transition between, you know, Nick and still talk at the moment. And, you know, it was very amicable, that transition. And, yeah, the door sort of aligned with Nick. I think the one thing for you, I don't know if there's any guys that are listening that are content creators and are thinking about doing it, but let me give you a tip. From an employer standpoint, if you're looking to get into a job as a content creator, content manager, or however you want to fucking spin it, you can put any title you want, marketing director, right? Doesn't matter, right? However you want to spin it, a tip from an employer to you guys is that if something that you want to do, you have to be willing to prove why. You know, I think initially I got you to do a trial video.
Oh yeah, yep. Yeah, so video and then a few photos.
Yeah, so I got him to do a video, I got him to do some photos. Yeah. He did it for free.
Free?
Oh my god, he did it for free. Guess fucking what, that's reality, right? Did I end up, like, it wasn't even really like something that I hadn't used, it was just I wanted to see what happened, right? So how he held himself on site, how he went up and down a ladder, was it something that he could, you know, and I like was lucky enough that I had a good relationship with the guy prior to him and he told me mad ribs. So that's how we did it at mine. So don't ever get your nose out of joint. If his helmet says, oh, hey, can you shoot a video for free? Go fucking do it. It'll take you 2 hours, maybe another 2 hours editing, but so far am I. So that was the first thing. And the second thing was is that I could tell, right, the number one thing that I used to triple through applicants, because employers, when they put up a thing as a content creator, you get an influx, heaps of people apply, like heaps. For you guys, like, even if Nick says, I literally will show you the scene, like, within like 3 days, you get like 80 applicants because you get like school leavers, uni students, people sitting at home, like, everyone wants to do it. And that's what I remember saying to Nick, like, everyone wants the title as a content creator. And yeah, I remember, so social media. I jumped on his socials and I could see that he was already living and breathing that space. That was a main point for me as well, as I wanted to see that. So if you don't do things for free, if you don't want to do that and you're not already active on socials with decent content, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
You know, don't blow out a website, because no, I didn't even care. If Nick had a fucking flat of his website, but he had no socials, I would have been like, no. You know, so because he was looking after my fucking social. So that's why I went in. So yeah, that would be my tips, is go hard on your own socials, be able to be very flexible, and, you know, just do whatever you need to do, you know what I mean? And understand that the honeymoon stage will wear off, you know, it will wear off, and it is up to you, only you, to be creative in that space. You have to be in that fucking space. I remember saying to Nick, look at construct, like, be in that space. Go and follow a ton of people. Keep scrolling. I don't care if he needs to sit on his phone for 4 hours. Literally, just dive in. That's his job, is to be in that space. So, that's my tips for you guys. That,
yeah.
I don't know if there's any content creators listening, but if you guys are thinking about actually training, you know, you fucking around the matter like Nick was, where you got a full time job, but you're currently just doing it on the side and want to take that job, whether it's construction or whatever, you can apply the same thing. So,
yeah. Also, quickly, I think, if you are going down this path, like, more on the the mental state side, it's like you got to be responsible for yourself. It's like you have to be able to manage your own time effectively.
Yeah.
You have to make sure you're hitting all these points. Yeah. But like, you also have to come up with those points sometime and like hold yourself to your own standard.
Yeah.
It's like Corey has his own job to do. So if I'm not doing my job properly, it'll fall back on you, which will then fall back on the rest of the business.
Yeah. So, and these have been things, obviously, processes and systems that we've implemented over time. It's not just a fucking flight to hit thing. We, you know, I've put things in motion with Nick and saying, like, listen, this is your responsibility. This is what I want you to do. The questionnaire, the directions, the communication style, how we do it. Breathe the reach outs and all that sort of stuff. These are things, you know, yes, I do, like anyone. Nick's not special. We, like everyone, sometimes need to give him subtle reminders and that. But at the end of the day, it is up to him to hold himself accountable. And I'm no idiot. I will know. Nick knows that I will eventually know. So it's like, and it's the same for any business owner. If you guys that are thinking that, like, don't ever get it twisted, they know. They will know. So you got to hold yourself accountable. And yes, you got to be very, you know, there's weeks where I'll say to you, hey, listen, so, you know, these 3 days, like, I need you. You know, I need you. You know, I need you on there. I need you on there. So when Nick was saying he's the first movie time, he's week to week, you know, some weeks more than others, whatever. But there are points in time, right? You know, and he strapped me boots on, brother. I mean, it'll work. Like, there are weeks where he needs to fucking, he needs to get a lot. So, just some weeks, it's not really a straightforward answer. So,
All right, guys, congratulations. You're halfway through this episode. I hope you guys are really enjoying it. But first, I just want to make a special thank you to Ideal Group Australia. Without them, I wouldn't be able to bring this podcast to you. So, special thank you. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Buckle in and get ready to listen to the end of this episode.
We're going. So, all right. Well, I'm going to now hand over. Now, this is probably the part of the segment of the podcast for you guys that are listening that you're probably looking forward to. So, we've got in front of me, there is a bunch of questions that I have not read. So, Nick is going to shoot them my way and I'm going to answer them open and honestly, and we are not going to cut this out. So,
let me take that MC podcast interview from you.
So tell them, how do we get these questions? What did you do to get them?
Oh, so a lot of these questions all of them came from you guys. Over the last week when we've been planning this episode, I've pretty much been spamming our stories with questions, just different prompts, trying to get people to ask us questions. So all of these are from you. And also, I've just went through a lot of comments, and if there's questions, similar questions that's been asked multiple times, I just like grouped them into one question.
Mm. Yeah, so this is going to be a good opportunity for you guys that have been there. So, well, here we go. So you just take it over from now and I will be the guest.
All right, first question. Do you actually know anything about construction?
All right, I'm going to give you guys a brief summary about me. I think I've already shared it a bit, but I'm going to go again because I'm sharing it. So a brief summary about me. Started my apprenticeship when I was 17. Yes, believe it or not, I am a qualified carpenter. Started my apprenticeship when I was 17. Finished my apprenticeship. I did both commercial and residential during the apprenticeship. I'm not going to go right the detail on regards to what I did each year. I worked with about 13 qualified chippies. I was the only apprentice, boss's son, and to everyone's belief, I actually got the fucking stick end in that scenario. It was not, Dabby's little boy. It was actually the opposite. We had apprentices that fucking got a much better deal than him. But anyway, my wife will vouch for that as well. So, finished my apprenticeship, back into my apprenticeship. As I literally finished my certificate 3, I enrolled myself in the Playground Building Construction. At that point in time, yes, for you people that are listening, you did not need a certificate 4. You could go straight into Playground Building Construction. By then, I was at that point in time, I was I got my subcontract license. I was subcontracting for a bathroom guy. I think he actually listens to the podcast right now. I was subcontracting to a bathroom guy in around Brisbane, really good guy. thinking about it now, the money was the money was great to me. Why now look at it? So yeah, I was subcontracting to him. While I was subcontracting to him, I was still in a hurt. Had a trailer, had a ute. Wasn't the best fucking, you know, he said these $40,000 trailers. It was like a $4,000 trailer that I kitted out myself. And I did my diploma in building construction at Master Builders for 10 months at night, 5 nights a week. So for you guys that are listening that are like, oh, I never have fucking time, I made time. I still worked 5 days a week, every single day, from fucking 6:30 till, you know, 3:30, 4 o'clock. I had enough time to go home, get my shit, go into class. So, and I did that and binged it. I didn't fucking push it back or anything like that. I was tomorrow, at 80 at the time as well. So I still had to, you know, keep up that relationship as well. And yeah, so sacrificed a little bit during that period. And yeah, so finished my diploma building construction. And then I was just contracting for a little bit there. I had about two guys working in with me. And then I applied for my builder's license. Now, you guys that are listening as well, you go, how did you get this builder's license? Blah, 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 blah. I hear it all. I lived and breathed it. So what I actually did is I was doing decks with all those bathrooms, renos, kitchens, this, that, and the other. I was also, during that period with that that bathroom guy, I did lead him for 6 months, and then I went to go supervise. So I did a bit of supervision work as well at the same time as working on the tools on weekends, this, that, and the other. Still doing my diploma as well at that point. And then, yeah, so I got up and up experience. I built contacts, you know, like in the industry, I got, you know, I did stuff for free, as you do. Yeah, so I built up some really good relationships and some good contacts that helped me get my builder's license. So I did that. And then I had four guys working for me at that point. My old man also was working for me at that point, including the other four guys. Took on my first apprentice. And, you know, before now, I was just dabbling with apprentices through East Coast and that. And then, yeah, so took on my first apprentice, had those guys. I'm trying to talk real fast to get this answer, to get this question through. So did that. And then, yeah, so back end of that, I basically went down the contractor path after getting my builder's license. And then I got up to the point where I had about 12 guys. I had no office help, no office, nothing like that. It was just my fiance at the time. Tamara, she was my fiance at the time. She was doing all the books where she could. And then she fell pregnant. And, I pulled her right back down. Still the same company, no debt, no, we didn't close up anything. It was still the same company. I never inherited anything. Yeah, maybe a pound or two, but, you know, I never actually inherited anything. This company was not given to me. For you that are wondering, yes, my old man's company just, you know, he closed it down and puffed up shop. There wasn't really anything there. It wasn't a multi-million dollar thing that you might be thinking about. So, yeah, puffed up shop. I didn't get anything. He actually had a little bit of tax debt, but that's not what I'm here to talk about. So, yeah, did that. And then fast forward to now, we have 15 people on payroll. Yes, I'm no longer on the tools, but there's valid reasons for that. I cannot be on the tools doing what I need to do. And we have a really fantastic team in and around us that have all bought in and, not financially bought in. And, you know, they've just invested their time and energy, and they can see where we're going. And, they're excited for that and so on. So, obviously I'm skipping a massive amount of things that's happened, but hey, that's the short and long of it. So that's the short answer to that is yes, I do have experience on the tools. So I just wanted to give you guys some context for you regards to that.
Pretty much just answered like six questions at once.
That's all right. Yeah, ask them anyway. I can elaborate further on that particular one.
So just quickly before we move on, I think the biggest thing people can take away from your little spiel there, if you make it a priority, you will have time. That's so it. Don't sit at home. I don't have time to start to study it. That, do this, do that.
That's it. You know what I mean? There was no real hobbies during that fucking 2-3 year period. I didn't have a hobby. And I still don't really have a fucking hobby. Even though I'd love to find one. Fitness at the moment is probably my hobby, but I wouldn't really class it as a fucking hobby. I just do that because it helps me do what I need to do with stuff.
Keep it up.
But, you know, yeah, so yeah, it's something you don't have time. you have to fucking make time.
Yeah.
And yeah. So
anyways, moving on. How do you stay motivated every day? Especially when, like, especially on the tours, you're waking up before the sun even wakes up.
So you're so motivated now or motivated back then?
I'd say a bit of both, from on the tours too now.
So when I was on the tours, what motivated me was just where I wanted to go. And I'm pretty sure it's pretty much the similar sort of, well, my motivation now has changed a little bit, and as it does with everyone. But back then, my motivation was always that, you know, I wanted to build a company that guys wanted to go work for. And I just always just had that fucking, I just always had that desire to want more and drive more. And you know, my wife was obviously, she was really supportive as well. And that was, you know, your fucking hands are sore, your back's sore, you're tired, you've had long days, you're dusty, your hair's dusty, you're fucking, you know, I've lived it all. So, I do get it for the guys that lack the motivation, but that's what I'm saying. It's just that for me, it wasn't, yes, some days were harder than others, but I always just knew that, I wanted to do it. There was no fucking, there was no steering that ship. It was just one way and finding go for it. Yeah.
That's it.
And just like touch on that, I'll wrap it up now, but it's just like, it's the same thing that I say to all apprentices. Doing this trade is not a check-in and check-out job. You're not doing it for the paycheck, all right? You're doing it for a career-based job, long-term. Like, you're in this fucking game for a long time. So, you know, if you want to go and get better money that you can, and go get that job that you just check out, that you clock in and clock off, and you do your thing, go and work at Harvey Norman. Go and work at fucking wherever you want to go and work, right? This game of construction, whether you're a carpenter, electrician, or whatever it is, it's a career-based job. So, and I knew that from the start. So,
yeah, it's actually funny you say, like, it's a career-based job, because I see a lot of comments of people like, I bet his staff's turnover is crazy. He's always hiring new people. Mm. But from what I've met, most of the guys here have been here for like years, a long time.
Yeah, like you guys have probably seen, like we have gone through a bit of a transition with different staff, but my main guys have been with me for years. Like, you know, I don't have a massive turnover in staff, and you know, it's something that I wouldn't even say it was a turnover. We changed what our, you know, it was a massive shift. We had a lot of big changes in the last 12 to 18 months. And, like the culture in our company now is huge. It's something that it's something that fucking just really motivates me. And just touching on that quickly, the thing that motivates me now, to the most part, obviously I've got a family and my kids and all that sort of stuff. That motivates me. But also what motivates me in the office to get up every day and come in here and keep on driving and keep pushing and keep doing it is the guys that I have that work for us. That's what motivates me. You know, these guys are out there busting their fucking balls every day in the heat, in the cold, getting up every morning, getting working late, doing everything that I used to do, you know, on the tools. And that is what fucking motivates me. I have an obligation, Nick has an obligation, and I reminded everyone that works for us that we all have an obligation to work towards common goal, and more so for me, because no one's texting me and saying, oi, what are you doing here? What are you doing there? No, nope. As a business owner, no one's fucking doing that. So, I've got to find the motivation in myself, and that's what fucking motivates me.
That's so true. Even for me, I'm not an early morning person. I'll usually get to site if I do go like 8:30, 9:30, which is early for me. But then these guys are like, yeah, we got here at like 6 o'clock, 6:15. I'm like, oh yeah, I need to make sure your content's good. Because it's like, I feel like I'm doing them a disservice.
Yeah.
If they're literally what you said, on site, busting their asses off. But I'm like, I just hold a camera. Like physically, that's all I need to do. I'm like, I have to make sure I hold this camera the best that I can.
Yeah, because I feel like, you know, I've been in that predicament where you do that and your boss just doesn't care. Where is he? He's doing this, he's doing that, he runs out of work, this, that, and the other. It's a kick in the guts. And like, I just, but that's a culture thing as well.
Yeah.
We're not going to go on like that. Some of that's like a pretty good topic. So.
One question we've actually gotten from a lot of people that are like just new business owners just starting out is, when do you know it's time to hire an employee?
I feel like it's going to sound very cliche, but it's like having a kid. There is no perfect time and there is no wrong time. I feel like if you've got the, got the workload there, and you will, even if it's not the right time and you feel like in your gut, because that's your best checkup, you feel in your gut that you can do it and the opportunity arises, guess what, you're going to find more work. If you get put under that pressure and you are truly an actual business owner in the making, you will thrive in that environment and you'll make shit happen. So, I hope that's not the answer. That's probably not the answer. Specifically 3 months. The reality is that you'll just know. And, there is no fucking perfect time. You just take the lead. The guy might work out. The guy might not. You might find work. You might not. You might have to let him go. But fuck me, that is business. That's it. So.
Yeah, that's so true. It could go either way. You could hire someone who's amazing, but then no work for the next 3 months, but then the vice versa could not happen. Yeah. You're packed down for the rest of the year, but then you hire a guy who's crap, then you need a
gut check. Gut check. If I had to put it in the simple term, gut check. Yeah. You have to rely on your gut and just go off that.
Yeah. We have, I should have noted here, this was a super specific question, which I think resonates with a lot of our older guys. He said, I am 30 years old. Should prior building experience be expected to start a carpentry apprenticeship?
Yes. Yep.
What would that look like?
I'm only talking from my experience on how we employ it is, we've had older guys when we say 30, everyone's going, you're still old. I'm all mean like old as in like older starting into the trade. That's what I mean. I feel like it is very, it will go a long way the more experience you have and you get that. Everyone, how do I get the experience if you're not going to fucking give us a go? Free bills. You know what I mean? Like, the reality is you got to start somewhere. And a company like us, I can't accept that. But hey, go and work for Bob and Bill down the road that does some fencing and say, hey, listen, boys, I can work every second Saturday for free. All I'm asking for is this. This all goes back to, if you want it, you'll make it happen. And over time, that Bob and Bill, you do a few Saturdays there for free, and it's, fuck it, it'll chug you $200. Those free Saturdays turn paid, and those paid Saturdays might turn into, you're actually half decent. Can you come in during the week? Come in during the week, turn into an apprenticeship. So, and so on and so on. So that's just a little example.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's like carpentry in a lot of the trades, it's a career.
It's a career.
Like, so, you can't be sad you're not making money in the start.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it is obviously hard. The guys that are going to jump in the other floor, season 7, you're 30 years old, you've got kids. Well, yeah. I'm only just telling you the harsh reality of it. You know what I mean? You can't expect to come in and get a mad panning job and be an apprentice at 30 years old, because it's just not going to happen, because an employer also needs to get their fucking stick out of you as well. It's a business. So,
going off of that topic, how do you deal with employees who want a pay rise? Do you raise costs to clients?
I love this. This is a good one.
This one was actually asked a bit too.
Okay, so how we deal with it. So I keep it very straight 180 with everyone in my company. That works for us, it's open transparency across the board. That doesn't mean that I like publicly tell everyone what everyone's paying. At the end of the day, everyone's going to fucking talk anyway. I've learned that the hard way. If you try to fucking keep things a secret between guys and, look, give this guy this and give that guy that, guess what? They're going to talk eventually. So let them fucking talk. But you're only going to do yourself the ass if you're lying to them. So basically how we do it is, I'll just tell you. So all our apprentices, doesn't matter who it is, adult apprentice, 17, 18, whatever it is, whatever Fair Work stipulates that we have to pay, that's what their pay is. I don't do it. I don't stipulate it. So whatever the government tells us to pay them, that's what they get. And that includes their entitlements, this, that, and the other. And I tell that straight to their face, and I tell that to all of them. So they want to go out there and I say, this guy needs more than me. Take it up with the government. It's not me. Right? So Obviously, if you get to the end of your apprenticeship, I'm talking like fourth year, end of your third year, you're really good, you're running a process, you got a good view, you got more tools, then I'm open for negotiation. And I'll tell that to them as well. I'm open for negotiation, but that's up to them. Right? How we do it with our qualified guys, it's the tiered system. You come in at that rate, not going to go up at rates for this, that, and the other. You come in at one rate, they all come in at the same rate. Then they go into a senior qualified position. Then there's a rate for that as well. Then there is a leading hand position, right? And there's different tiers that we do it on. Then there's a leading hand, and each level requires, as I say, as you go up in each level, it becomes less and less about how good you are at your job. Because at that point, I already know that you're good at your job, and I couldn't give two fucks about that. As you go up in those levels, it becomes more about your managerial style, how you communicate with people, how you manage different people in a room. How many people can you manage at one point without blowing your lip? How many phone calls do I get a day? How many supervisors are going to ring me and tell me that you're not doing X, Y, and Z? Are you professional? These are all the things that I can go on and on and on for the next 20 minutes about it. But that's how we do it. So as you work up the tiers, and there is obviously, you know, with our company, this comes back down to why we're doing what we do, why I'm doing what I do, is I've always said, oh, I want to give them more opportunities. Like any of you chippies that are listening, you might be work for a builder and you're just a qualified chippy and you feel like you're stuck there. There's no room for growth other than just being your own business owner. In and out business, there is room to grow. And I'm giving that opportunity to the guys that are working for me. Each level, as we get bigger, the more opportunities, you know, pretty much you go for leading hand to operations managers, to running teams, to this, that, and the other. So estimators, etc. The list goes on and on and on. So that's how we run it. So I don't just have a clear answer for that. But basically, that's how we do it. All our apprentices are basically ours by the government. And as you chivies that are the scene would all know, the government suggested pay break is a lot fucking less than what we actually pay. That's not me having a go. I was also a chivie as well, believe it or not. So I understand that. So it no longer goes off that. We just have tea in our business. So that's how we do it.
I'll just quickly nitpick something from there. Just left my head. Oh my gosh.
That's all right.
No, if it comes back, it'll come back.
Yes.
Anyways, we just talked a lot about carpentry specifically. If all trades paid the same, what would you do?
You mean like what would I do? Like what avenue would I take?
Yeah, so say you hadn't started yet,
yep.
Like started Ideal yet, you're still qualified.
Yeah.
But then some random law comes out, every tradie makes the same money now.
Yeah.
Would you still stick as it, or would you want to venture into somewhere else?
Oh, that's actually a really good question. Man, you got me.
And we'll say it's more than the average carpenter is making right now.
Yeah, like it's an average across the whole. Yeah. Cool. I feel like what I would do is I would actually probably stay. So you're saying, because I'm just trying to work it out. So you're saying that I'm a qualified carpenter.
Okay? Yeah.
Yeah. I would stay.
Just because you already had the experience?
Because I already had the experience and, you know, I believe, anyway, that, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot more opportunities and a lot more avenues to go down as a carpenter.
So if you weren't qualified yet,
and like because I wouldn't go back. Like,
yeah,
I know guys that have done dual apprenticeships and that's fine. Like I know guys that have like jumped trades and that.
Yeah,
and that's fine. But I just feel like it's a waste.
So what if you hadn't started your apprenticeship yet and you're looking to go to one?
I don't know. I don't know. Do you guys don't want to actually hear something funny? Here, let me tell you something. I'll give you guys actually a bit of insight into my life. My wife tomorrow will vouch for this as well. If I was from a carpenter, believe it or not, I was actually going to university and doing a degree in counter-terrorism.
I wouldn't even know what that is.
Counter-terrorism is like internal border.
I would not guess that. What the heck?
So I actually applied. I wasn't smart enough. So that's why I'm chippy, but I actually applied to like two different universities for that degree, and that was something that I was passionate about. And I didn't end up getting it, and the door just opened up to go down the apprenticeship path with the carpentry, and that's what I am now. So, a little insight for you guys, might be a little bit about my life.
So, And I'm pretty sure this the same person asks this next question. They ask, if you could start another business knowing what you know now, what would you do and what would you do differently?
If I could start another business, what would I do? I would love to say like e-commerce and that, but I just don't, I don't know. I don't have the passion for it. And I feel like it's very lucrative, not lucrative, but it's like one of those things that everyone's doing. And then it's, I don't know. I like service-based businesses, like what we do. Like we offer a service and I feel like, you know, I don't know. I like the feeling and, you know, this guy's there, oh yeah, I can turn like a $10 million company and have 4 employees. Like I like employees. I like an office. I like having that stuff. And, you know, and for me, I don't know, I'd probably just do another service-based business.
In my head, I imagine you transitioning into like a PT or something.
Nah, I like doing fitness and that, but to be honest, it's like a bucket. Like it's, you know, my wife would be like, boy, you know, it is his life. But like the reality is all you need to do is jump on Instagram and everyone's a coach at the moment, you know.
Literally everybody.
You go down to the Gold Coast, you go into any gym down there, and every single person that's in there is an online coach. So
with their camera out making content.
Yeah, man, like I don't know. I feel like there needs to be this is obviously talk the business talking now, but I feel like there needs to be a different avenue for that. Because it's almost overwashed with
definitely,
you know what I mean? Like, it's like everyone's got the hat, you what's hard to have, give me nutrition. Like, don't get me wrong, people do it successfully, whatever, at the moment, but I feel like it can be very overdone. So, I don't know. I'd probably just do another service based business. If I knew what I knew now and I was starting again, like, it would just it would be much, it would be much faster transition.
All right, coming back to more construction topics. Okay. What's been your best marketing strategy at getting work in?
Word of mouth.
No.
Word of mouth.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I think marketing strategy and how we go to the market was always just, social was now, obviously, but the best ones that come in are the ones that come to you. You don't go to them. Obviously, right at the start, in the early days, if you guys are starting now, but really want to fucking know how it worked, is we went to Bunnings, me and my wife, or girlfriend at the time, went to Bunnings, we bought a 24x12, about 8 of them, Malamine, cut them in half, we got a big old thick pedal bar from Officeworks, we drilled 2 holes in the fucking top of it with a bit of rope, telecom rope, and we wrote my number, and we wrote Carpenter Wants Work. And we literally went around, probably 4 suburbs in around Brisbane, and we put these fucking signs up and tied it in posts. That's what I did. Put my number on it, tied it to posts. At this point, I think I only have one on this, so if you, this is revert back to the question about whether or not you have an employee, I did it. So, and that was the same thing. I was running out of work, so what did I do? I did that. And, you know, some of the phone calls were, can't I take your fucking sign away from my house? Some of the other ones were, hey mate, I've got a fence that's broken, this, that, and the other. All right, this is well before Marketplace and well before Gumtree and that. And all these fucking community pages that are out now, that's a lot easier to get in there. This is before all that. So that's what I did. And, you know, I expanded on those contacts. You know, I do a really good job for Billy. Fix his fence. Then he'd say, oh, can you do a bathroom? Yep. Then he'd say, oh, my friend Jenny wants a job. And then, you know, that's just sort of how I did it right at the start. So,
That goes back to what we were saying before about making it a priority. It's like that's really what separates people from who want it to those who don't. Yeah. A lot of people can't even imagine themselves like asking for work or like advertising themselves. I was like, if you're not going to do it, no one's going to call it.
That's what I mean. Like you got to swallow your pride and you'll make it work whether you want it, you know, and it just comes down to all of those things. Like I've had so many guys that, oh, they want all this, they want that and the other, and I could just tell, like, I know whether or not they actually do, or they're just saying rap. So, you know.
This next question is probably someone that, like, probably someone. There's a question that I know a lot of apprentices are, like, wondering, wanting to know. It's something I already know your answer on. But what's the quickest you have signed someone off?
4 years. You know, I don't, unless you're a product of fucking God. You come down and you blow my socks off and that, but this comes down to transparency as well. I tell them straight to their face, you know, I'm not signing you off early. You know, and that's not even me being a dick. For you guys that are listening, you apprentices that are listening, they're like, oh, but he, you know, oh, yeah, but fuck, blah, blah, blah. Let me explain it to you like this. And it's something that I got told in a very early stage where I was an apprentice as well. At the end of the day, it's a business. And an employer has to get something out of you. That's not them being a dick. They also need something out. And I'm like, what the fuck is the point? Yeah, an apprentice, right? No free handouts in this world. So, as I said, listen, put you through your time, have your training, you do your job, and then all I expect is for you to stay around and just give back to the next level of apprentices. Right? That's it. That's all I ask. So, why would I get an apprentice for a year and then he get qualified and sign him off? What have I got out of that? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Right? I just had this guy just train up with me, pay for his training, and then him just leave. Nothing. So, but that all comes down to transparency. When you sign someone up as well, you have to be transparent and talk that through as well, just so they know that you're on the same page. You know, and I have guys that come in halfway through their apprenticeship, if they're a second or third year, and aren't the same thing yet. You know, they might think that they're, oh, I'm going to get so, you know, only was it, you know, probably 6 months ago, we had a guy that was a third or fourth year and he wanted to get signed off in like 3 months. And I remember saying to him, it's not going to happen. But I said, listen, I'll give you a contract for 12 months. No, 12 months. Instead of being 12 months, I'll sign you off after those 12 months. Because what I was going to get out of that was I was going to get a guy that was pretty experienced. He had the full kit. And I was going to get him pretty much as a carpenter, right? But for a discounted rate. I was going to pay for the remainder of his training. And then what's he going to get? He was getting his qualification in 12 months. Done. Dusted. So, It's a bit of a rocky thing for you guys that are thinking of jumping ship during your apprenticeship. I would recommend it. It's a bit hard because as you get further and further down the line, finishing your apprenticeship, you become more undesirable to the future employers.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people, not even just apprentices, like a lot of people fail to realize is even as an employer, you still have to have that exchange of value to your. Sorry, as an employee, you still have to have that exchange of value to your employer. It's like, yes, we go to a job and they pay us, but we have to make sure they're getting their money's worth. Like, yeah. It has to go back the other way too.
Yeah, and I feel like it's the same. As I say to all the guys that we employ, it's the same for me.
Yeah.
That's what I've got to do, the same thing in mind when I'm working for clients as well. So that's just how the fucking world works. And if there's a break in the link, that's how businesses fail. So, you know, that's why it comes down to culture, being very transparent with the team, the expectations that you've set. So, yeah, the short answer to that is 4 years. That's it. I don't have the fucking success story where it's like, well, in 18 months, you know, so.
I feel like you're going to get a lot of hate for that, even though it's supposed to be 4 years.
It is what it is.
We're pretty much getting through all of these.
Yeah.
I think this isn't a question anyone's asked, but I think it would be good to elaborate on, is how have you, like, managed to build... What's the word like a good work culture? Because a lot of the boys on site, like obviously everyone has their ups and down days, but for the most part, everyone's usually pretty happy to be working.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is you gotta sell people on the drain.
Yeah.
No, that's not what I think. You gotta sell them on the drain and they're all gonna look to you for reassurance. You have to be the most reassuring person there. You have to, and let me just, so culture has been something that I have learned the last 12 months, and it's probably the most important thing for you guys that are business owners or you guys that are thinking about getting in the trade or starting your own company. You have to make that the most important thing. Without a good culture set, the rest will fail. And that, hence, we went through a massive shift in our employees. I got rid of a bunch of people and, you know, I've just aligned with what I want, who I want. And I'm not afraid to go back to two people. I mean, that those two people have the cold that I want. So, I basically, you know, sold them on the dream, told them what it was, and that wasn't me just selling them. Let me just say, like, it also comes down to them seeing it. Everyone that's employed by me I don't just talk the fucking talk. They see it as well. And that also comes down to what drives me as well, is I have a fucking duty to everyone young to see results and see growth and see progression in there. I feel like it goes hand in hand. You can only sell people, you can only tell and promise people so much. Yeah. You know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You know, that can go on for maybe 6 months, maybe 8 months, 12 months, if you're lucky. Eventually, those people they tell that to, they'll lose interest. Ah, you know, it's just all the shit together. All right, but for me, I spit a big old dream. I could sell a massive ass dream. But, you know, I prove it is what I say. I'm like, listen, this is what we're doing. They see the people coming in, the style of work, the growth, the opportunities, this, that, and the other. And, you know, I share it to my pen that then the ROI on that then fucking go drives the culture as well. It drives that. So it goes hand in hand. You have to do both. You can't do one without the other. You can't just be sitting there telling people all you know. And let me just say as well, I think like in the trades community, it's such a big thing. You know, going to the pub with the boys on a Friday afternoon and having a few beers, that's not building culture. That's not building culture. That's not building real culture. Trust me. It's, you know, and I'm going to get hate for that. People are going to go, oh, you know, but yeah, you can go to the pub. That's not building real company culture. That's fake. It's fake culture. When you're sitting down at that pub and you're sitting with your four mates that you're employed, right, your buddy, catch up with your mates on the weekend, oh, yeah, how was your week? That's not real culture, right? How I gauge culture is when you're not around, right? How long that can go and sustain it for, you're not around. For me, I don't even need to see my guys at all. I could go weeks without seeing them. And they still rock up, happy as, good things. Obviously, we have communication thing. Like, I still communicate with them. But, yeah, so you just need to understand that, yeah, like, it's not... There's a massive difference between what people assume is culture and what really is actually culture. And for you guys that have seen our socials and our team days and they all think it's hokey-dokey and weird, it works, you know what I mean? Like, when you do something awkward and weird with someone, it builds that culture and it builds that team environment and stuff like that, you know what I mean? I don't feel like getting in those environments where there's things between you, meaning alcohol, you know, and that sort of stuff. I don't think that really does it, so...
But I think you're right, it does work, and like, I'm not even trying to glaze because I work here. And I've been on site where, you know, they're deep into work and like something's gone wrong. Instead of yelling at each other, they're like, they all know that they're in the crap together. Yeah. Instead of like, oh, you're the reason this happened. This real why X, Y, Z happened. They're just like, it happened. That we need to stop complaining and work. Yeah. And that's usually what they do.
That's it. It's an on about point thing is... and yelling and fuck this and fuck that. But it all stems from the leader. You know, what do they say? A fish rots from the head down. So, you know, if the head's fucked, the whole fish is gone. So you, the business owner, is what it all fucking stems from. The culture that you set and what attitude you bring to work, how you want things to run, is how it will all fucking stand. If you yell at your employees, if you prioritize money over culture, if you do all that sort of stuff, that's all going to trickle down to the lowest parts. So, I'm still learning to that. But, you know, it's one of those things. You have to sometimes push profitability. And all these guys that are business owners are... sometimes you've got to push all that shit to the fucking side, right? And focus on what really matters. And the rest of it will look after itself eventually. It will. You come back to profitability and cash flow charts and pipeline fucking management and all that sort of stuff, that's all still very important. But guess what? If you've got all that and you've got a shit team and a shit culture, that will fucking destroy it. So,
people forget that businesses are made up of humans. And when you're looking after humans, you need to be human to them.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by, like, if I could ever go back and start again, what I know now, like, I love service-based businesses, and I feel like it's, like, it is a people game, and, you know, the skills that I've learned to now, if I could barista up, I would speed the process, like, so fast. But in saying that, you've got to walk your own path, like, the fucking hard way. So,
All right, I think we've answered most of them. Now, as our last question, what is your favorite smoker snack?
All right, this is going to be a very, very controversial one. I don't really have smoker snacks anymore, but my favorite fucking smoker snack was a Chico roll with extra chicken salt, like a disgusting amount of chicken salt. That and, you know, maybe a coffee. That was like, yeah, and that was my fucking go-to. I haven't had a Chico roll in like 8, like nearly 2 years. So I don't know. Chico roll with extra chicken salt. Give it a fucking go. And an icebreaker. Yeah. If your smoker then comes to site at like 9:30, we get it in the morning. I'm telling you, it's the matter.
Yeah.
You have that just before you put trusses up and see. Yeah.
Yeah, sick. I can tell you from experience.
So, but yeah. No, that's sort of about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And just reverting back to all these comments and questions and stuff like that, you know, if you guys are listening, I do really appreciate what you guys are doing and getting in on the podcast. I'd love for you guys to share it, tell people about it and really push it. I feel like this is a community that we can really dive deep on, and you know, I wouldn't say that it's untapped because there is a lot of people out there, there are a lot of other different platforms, but hey, you know, for the guys that are come on the come up and that sort of stuff, this is a really good platform for us. So, yeah, and keep the comments coming, good, bad, ugly, I don't give a fuck. So keep them coming. And, yeah, like we'll probably run this back and go again. And, Nick have put me in the fucking hot seat again. If there's anything else on the top of your head that you want to ask me before we close up shop, you know what I mean?
Anything off the top of my head? Oh, here's a funny one. We talked about this like, I think last week or something.
Mm.
Do you need to be fit to be a car?
All right, here we go. Do you need to be fit to be a carpenter? Short answer, yes. That's going to be a bit, that doesn't mean that you need to be rocking a six pack. All right. That just means that you need to be fit and able to do the fucking task at hand. If you're 140 kilos and you can't be on your feet all day, it's not the job for you. It's a labor intensive job and you're outdoors. It's not like any other fucking job that's out there. I don't care. I do not care. You cannot compare being a carpenter to working in a factory, being a diesel mechanic, being a fucking plasterer, being a tiler. Guess what? We work indoors, outdoors, high, low, in the mud, in the sun, in the rain, on scaffold, not on scaffold. You're bent over, you're reaching up, you're in every position, right? It's, you know, you're not a bricklayer that's just bending over a little bit to lay a course in a bricklayer. Oh, you know, you foxes, you don't know, it's the hardest job in the world, right? I'm not here saying that being a carpenter is the hardest job in the world. There are much harder jobs out there, but it has to be one of the most diverse and labor intensive jobs with movements and constantly changing environments, and because you could become job fit. Like if you, let's just say for a scaffolder, for instance, right? If you're a scaffolder, you do that for 6 to 8 months. You know they're going to jump, oh, you're going to be super strong, super fit. Yeah, you do. You do that for 6 to 8 months. By the end of that 6 to 8 months, you'll be like job fit. You'll be able to be strong enough to do what you're going to do, and you'll be able to do it relatively easy, continuously. Right? With a carbon, it's constantly changing. Right? You got to be comfortable with light. You got to be comfortable to be underneath a house. You know, you don't want to be too big. You don't want to be too small. It's one of those things. So, but yes, short answer to it, yes, for you guys that are listening, you have to be fit to be a carpenter.
Yeah, that's funny. Something just clicked in my head. A lot of these other, like, business owner guests we've interviewed that stepped off the tools,
Yeah. They're
like, all the CrossFit.
Yeah.
But, like, to make sense.
Yeah, it's literally like, you, and I said this to my boys when I stopped being on the tools, it was like, I had to watch my health. Because, like, it's very easy. Once you're on the tools all the time, once you jump off, right, I could easily in 6 months blind 140 kilos and just fucking like. So it was even more important for me to dial in my health and look after that because it was very easy. I always joke to the guys on site, you go through phases. So when you start your apprenticeship, you're super skinny, you know what I mean? You're very easy going, blah, blah, blah. You just eat whatever, you know, you work hard all the time, so you're super fit, super skinny. And then as you get like progress through your apprenticeship and you become qualified, you put on a little bit more weight, you know what I mean? You meet a girlfriend, you've got a bit more money, you go out on weekends, you've got the money to buy extra food and whatever, so you put on a few extra kilos, but yet you still be able to do your job. And then, you know, you go through that whole like phase of like, you know, you look at the photos of me when I was apprentice and when I was qualified, like I was like, yeah. So yeah, it's funny. But
I think that wraps up our Q&A.
All right. Well, I hope you guys that are listening got some insight into myself and into Nick. Maybe on the next one, I interview Nick a little bit more. And I ask him, we'll put up a poll for questions for Nick. And we'll make it a little bit more content focused on that podcast. But hey, as long as you guys have a little bit more insight into me, into us, how we do it. And
hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. If something hit home for you, it would mean the absolute world to us if you could like and share this podcast with someone else that would benefit from it. Tune into next week's episode, as this will be one that you don't want to miss.